Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck a Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information contained herein and provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended and shall not be construed as legal advice. And with that, enjoy the show.
Are you looking for more support while you navigate your divorce? Well, guess what? We can give that to you. Direct link in our show notes to our private Facebook community where you can ask questions, get some cheap entertainment, and most importantly, feel less alone.
This is the only divorce podcast that's one part family law attorney and one part recovering comedian. We're dedicated to bringing you action steps, empathy, and a healthy side of snark. This is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
You know, the best part about getting divorced is having the ability to write the next chapter in your life.
Oh, I love that. And I'll add that I tell my clients all the time that setting yourself up for success in your next chapter is key to living your best life.
Girl, facts. And guys, you know your girls, Andrea and Morgan. We're always going to give you pro tips on how you cannot suck at getting divorced, which brings us to our family wizard.
Friends, hear me on this. Our family wizard is not just for couples going through a high conflict divorce.
No, it's for anyone who wants to be more organized with expenses, kids' activities, calendar requests, and messaging.
We recently co-wrote a special article for Our Family Wizard that gives you tips on how best to communicate with your challenging co-parent and come out on top.
And to get access to this article written just for you listeners, go to ourfamilywizard.com/notsuck.
Hi there. So I'm laughing about something today that you can probably relate to. You know how people with children, sometimes weekends are just not our own anymore? You know how that is? Mm-hmm. So, funny story, I had my friend out to spend the weekend with me, and he is a hilarious, lovely guy, but he has no kids. So he still gets to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. So last evening, we made a beautiful dinner. I think I had maybe a drink or two because I knew I was getting up at the, you know what, the butt crack with the kids, right? I think he had 294 drinks because there's no reason not to. This morning, he wakes up at about 9:30. I've lived 200 lives by then with my children. And so then I decided, you know what, I'm going to torture him. I'm going to let him see what it's truly like to have, you know, kids because we are glorified Uber drivers. So I said, you know, get your shit together. Let's go. I've got a million places I got to take these kids. Let's go. So he gets in the car and about 10 minutes in, he just looks, he's very quiet. 10 minutes in, he looks over and he says to me, so when on the weekends do you relax?
What's like, what?
You're like, this was it.
That was it. Don't I look so relaxed? There's kids screaming in the back, like, you know, all the things. So it's just two very different lifestyles, which, hey, God bless. I mean, I'm kind of jealous sometimes of his lifestyle. And I'm sure that, you know, there's parts of mine that he feels the same way about, but it's definitely two different lifestyles happening at once. It was good.
Speaking of, you and I have two different lifestyles because with me being divorced and co-parenting, I do every other weekend, kids, no kids. And this is my no kids weekend. And my fiance, Steve, played a show last night in downtown Chicago because he's a musician on the side. And I was out until, I mean, two something, maybe more. I mean, oh my God. And I was thinking to myself, this is so funny. Like just the difference in mom life. And I had a bunch of my friends came out to like hang out with me and they're all parents or most of them are parents. And so at some point they were like, we got to go. Like we've got babysitters we're paying for. Like we got to get out of here. And none of us live in the city anymore. So everyone had to schlep like back out to the suburbs. Yeah. And so they're like, how long is this going to go on for? I'm like, I don't know. I forgot what it's like. So I am so tired. Literally, Morgan, all I have done today is binge watched Love is Blind.
Oh.
And that's all I have in me because I'm not built for this life of staying out.
Did
so
you, on a scale, did it bring you back to like you were 25 again and part of were like, I kind of got this?
No, no part of me thought that I had it. In fact, I had wine at dinner. I'm such an old lady. I had wine at dinner. And then I get to the bar and I'm like, I don't think I can drink because you can't mix. Like that would be so irresponsible. And my friends are like, are you, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I'm just going to do club soda, maybe a Diet Coke, but I think I'm good. And that's what I did all night long. I danced my butt off. If you go to my Insta stories right now, Morgan, you will see evidence of how hard I partied without liquor. So,
and you're still kind of friends, like tired. You might as well be hungover. You should have just gone all out.
Not a damn difference.
Nope.
Not a damn. I still look like Death Becomes Her.
Right.
So, you know what? There's that. And speaking of none of this, I was trying to find like a way to like wrap this all up in my mind, but it didn't work. So speaking of none of this, today, how's that for a segue? Good.
Mm-hmm. Real smooth.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, professional. Today we're talking about what if you are in that place of, should I do this? Should I not do this? I really feel like I should get a divorce, but I am so worried that my kids are not going to recover from this. We're going to give you some stories to show you some people who did go through this as kids and how it impacted their lives and what life is like for them now. So we're going to speak to a handful of women and you're going to hear firsthand what it was like to have their parents get divorced.
Yes. And you know, one thing we're going to do today is because these women are coming on to talk about their experience, which is just like Andrea sharing, so important to them, but also so private. We are not going to be using their last names. We will tell you generalities about them. You'll know their first names and you'll also know kind of what they do for a living, which is interesting to see what they've gone through and where they are now. But for their privacy, we're going to be pretty careful about putting them on social media and all that kind of stuff just to protect them.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's chat with these girls and let's teach everybody a thing or two, shall we? And meanwhile, I'm going to try to stay awake. So here's the deal. We know that so many of you guys who listen to this show are in this place of deciding what they're going to do about their marriage. Or maybe you've already decided and you're starting this process, but in the back of your mind, you're still thinking, holy shit, I am so worried about these kids. I don't know if this is going to forever impact them in such a negative way. Or maybe you're not even there yet. Maybe the idea of hurting your kid has paralyzed you and you don't know what to do. I want you to pay attention to this conversation that we're about to have, because this right here is some reassurance.
That's right. And so, you know, legally, I think everybody feels that parenting's hard enough. There's no playbook. There's no guidebook for parenting. And then add the legal aspect on top of it. And what I see are people are really concerned about what could happen to their children in this process. They've seen divorces or heard about divorces that have gone really badly. They may have the misconception that all divorces, you've just automatically, if you get divorced, you've messed up your kids. I hear that at times, which I don't agree with, and we'll talk about why. But at the end of the day, it's some parents are kind of stepping back and saying, you know what? I'd rather be miserable because I think this is going to hurt my kid and they're not going to come out okay. So I'm just going to stick with it. These are all things I hear. And that's why we thought today's episode was so important, to talk to a few people that have been through it and grown up through this process.
So we're going to talk to three women who have all been through this. They were all children whose parents got divorced, and their stories might be different. Actually, two of these girls are related and their stories are different. So I think that it's important to listen that even though they went through something, they are okay. They are better than okay. These are all thriving individuals, and they have all learned so many important life lessons because of what they went through in their childhood.
Yep, that's right. And so I want to introduce everybody so that our listeners can kind of get a feel. What I want to do is, we told you we're not going to use our last names, but I am going to introduce them one by one, and I'm going to ask them what they do for a living in generality, so that you can kind of get a sense of who we're talking to and how they've grown up through the process. And as grown women, they have become to be successful women. So the first person that we're talking to today is Larissa. Larissa, thanks for coming on. What do you do for a living?
I'm a physician.
All right. And we have your sister actually here today, Eden. And what I love that we have Eden on for is because Andrea and I always talk to people, and we say in divorces, there's so many people, you could be in the same situation with a husband and wife, or wife and wife, or husband and husband, and witness the exact same thing and have completely different opinions about what you saw. So today we're bringing on two sisters who went through the same divorce process with their parent, and they're probably going to have a lot of differences in what they saw and what they felt. So Eden, thank you for coming on. What do you do in general?
Thanks for having me. So yes, Eden, I work for a pharmaceutical company, and I live in the New York, New Jersey area.
All right. And then we have Meg. Meg, thank you for coming on. What do you do for a living?
Thanks for having me. I do employee benefits, so I work for an insurance broker.
All righty. We have a whole bunch of underachievers here. Ha ha ha. I was waiting for someone to be like, not a whole lot. I do nothing. So, okay. Let's start here. Larissa and Eden, how old were you guys when mom and dad separated?
So I was probably about 8 or 9. And just so you know, Eden had like a photo, her memory is like photographic. She knows everything. So she probably has the facts better than I do. So you were right, Larissa. So they actually, which is interesting about our situation, is they filed. So we're 2 years apart. I'm 2 years older. They filed when I was 8 and fully separated when I was 10. And they lived together for about 1.5 years to almost 2 years while they were going through the divorce process.
Prior to them separating, did you guys know that there was something going on in the house between the two of them? Do you remember any kind of tension? What was that like?
So I could say from my memory, I didn't really remember much from that time. I don't have so much of a memory of my parents together. All I remember is from that stage is that my dad used to stay in our rooms, but I thought it was like cool because dad was like sleeping in my room. So my thoughts about that period of time were positive because I was like, oh, cool, dad's sleeping in my room tonight. I'm not sure, Eden, how your perception was during that time period.
It's funny because I kind of have the same take. So you, I think it's probably because you were a littler. You were 6 when they filed. So for 1.5 years, my mother used to have this calendar, and it would be like weeks in mom's room, where we got to spend a week in mom's room. So we actually thought it was awesome. I was like, it's my week in mom's room. So my father used to do musical rooms between our, because we have a brother as well, between Larissa and my brother's room and my room. So for us, actually kind of a fun period of time. And we also did one-on-one activities with both parents where we didn't necessarily, I mean, they said they were getting divorced. We knew kind of what divorce was, but I think we were young enough that it didn't really impact us. It was like, oh, we're doing a trip with dad. This is awesome. Or, ooh, we're doing a trip with mom. So I almost felt like, as strange as it sounds, it was like a special time for us.
That's so interesting. That kind of makes me think that obviously you had two parents who were pretty mature in a really difficult process, because a lot of our listeners are probably thinking, what the hell, Larissa and Eden? Like, what? We're not acting like that. I can't stand my ex. I can't even like be in the same room with them, let alone figure out basically a temporary room schedule like you guys went through. So did you feel that way, that they were a little more mature?
As an adult, I cannot believe how mature my mother was through the situation. And the older I got, the more I appreciated how she handled the situation. We'll probably get into more specifics later on. But she never said a bad word about my father. My father very rarely said a bad word about my mother. And if anything, my mother would reinforce that we needed to spend quality time with my father. It was never contentious. I don't remember an argument between them. I don't know if that's healthy or unhealthy, but like there was never fighting in front of us ever.
Wow.
And sorry, this is Eden again, but just for the reasons they had gotten divorced, my father cheated on my mother and my mother was aware of it and went back to school, got her degree and filed once she saved up money. So there was definitely a lot of animosity and anger there that we never knew about ever.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot for a mom to navigate, you know, and keep to herself. But I love the fact that your mom went back to school before she left. Like, that is like a smart, smart lady. So once mom and dad separated, what was the custody situation like? I mean, did they split the time evenly? Like, what did that look like? Eden, go ahead.
All right, so I'll go ahead first. So actually, it was a little unique. My father decided to take this opportunity to go to law school after they got divorced. So he was in his 40s, went back, got his law degree, and he actually moved to Europe after he finished law school. So although they had 50-50 custody, we did spend the majority of our time with our mother. And saying that, and when you like kind of look back on like how mature your parents were and sacrifices they made, and especially Larissa being a physician and going to school, and I went to grad school, I think probably everybody on the phone here went to grad school. My father, while he was in law school, went to Vermont and would come down at least once a month to either spend the weekend with us or pick us up and drive us back to Vermont, which was 8 hours away from where we lived. And going to grad school, I never had that appreciation for the amount of time that he invested to spend time with us until I was in my 20s.
So Larissa, you're with mom most of the time. Do you remember, and obviously this is like before the FaceTime age, like what was it like? Like, do you remember, was there a time when you would call dad on a regular basis? I mean, he was also overseas for a lot of this, right? So do you remember how often you had communication with dad? I know you said before, Eden, that mom always encouraged quality time, but what did that look like?
You know, I don't remember the specifics of that time period, but I don't, like, when I think
I love that Eden is laughing at you, by the way. I love your...
It's like she blacked it out.
As you're saying, I don't remember. I can just see Eden like, of course you don't remember. You remember nothing. That's why they had to add me to the show.
It's true. I needed someone with a better memory than mine, but I wouldn't say, I think it's just more because I was so young. I don't know the specifics of it, but I have like a feeling of, you know, I think what I hold on to in adulthood is how I felt during that time period. And I don't recall that we had scheduled time. My mom would let us talk to our father whenever we wanted to, and he would call whenever he wanted to. So it was pretty regular communication. And that was the days of letters and cards as well. And so, you know, we would write letters back and forth. We'd have cards. We would have phone calls. And just to piggyback kind of on what Eden said, now as an adult, you know, our father wasn't as physically present during that time period. But I look back and think about how he used to do that round trip from Vermont. You know, he'd drive down on like a Friday, and I think it's like 4 hours one way,
pick us up and then get on the road again and go 4 hours back and then keep us for 2 days and then do the same thing all over again. Mm. So, you know, they were pretty present, either if they weren't there physically, you know, just kind of mentally, psychologically were really present with us.
So one of the questions I had, it sounds really that you guys were one of the lucky ones. You kind of went through pretty shielded divorce, which is awesome. But, you know, for our listeners, if I'm correct, everything wasn't perfect for you. So there were a lot of concerns, I think, about splitting up and money and things like that. And if I recall, your father had to move into a very small, at some point, one-bedroom apartment, and he had three children that you would have to go over there and spend time with him because money was tight at that point. So you survived. It wasn't ideal, but it was okay. And so for our listeners who are wondering how to split up and they don't have money to live somewhere else, and am I going to mess up the kids if I leave this four-bedroom house and I'm in a one-bedroom or a two-bedroom? Talk to that, Larissa. How did that go down?
I do remember that. Tucker and I have very vivid memories of this. Those weekends in Vermont were so fun. My dad had a one-bedroom studio with an alleyway kitchen. I don't think it could have been more than 600 square feet. I'm watching Eden's face to see, but I think it was probably about 600 square feet. I remember a futon. I don't even know if he had a bed. It was a standing plastic shower in the corner. And I can't even tell you how small this kitchen was. And all three of us would pile into that, you know, apartment and not think anything of it and have really fond memories. You know, we lived right in the downtown of, you know, a small area in Vermont. And we'd run around the town there. We'd go hang out with all his law school buddies. And, you know, I do remember the details of a popsicle that Eden got her hung stuck on up there as well. So there's a lot of really fond, funny memories from that time period.
So basically, if I'm recapping for our listeners, you're kind of saying that they made it work. Whatever the money that they had at that point, I think it's all about what you do with it. Because I'm looking at your face, I'm looking at Eden's, and our listeners can't see it, but you're both super successful sisters, grown up, and have come through this process. It wasn't all exactly perfect. But you don't have memories where it's just like, God, I imploded because of this divorce. You're really saying like, you're okay.
You know what my takeaway is? I wonder if we talked to Dad, right, how different his version would be. Because I bet he carried the weight and the stress of, oh, fuck, I've got all these kids and we have a futon
right,
and a plastic shower, yep, right? And I think just like all of the parents who listen to our show, like, I mean, as a parent, I can say we feel that weight so heavy on us. Like, oh my God, is this enough? And to hear that your main takeaway is the day when Eden got her tongue stuck to a goddamn popsicle, right? Like Morgan set this up as like, guys, I know that you would have to go visit Dad in a one-bedroom studio apartment. There's three of you plus him in a tiny space. Tell me about it. And then you say to me, well, there was that one time when Eden got her tongue stuck to a popsicle, right? Like, you have nothing about everything that we as a parent would probably worry about. And I just think that that is really remarkable. And I hope that it lands with people who are hearing this, right? That it really is what you do with the situation.
Morgan, I will never forget that day when I walked by my mirror and I looked at myself and I thought, what happened to me? I mean, I literally saw the stress of my divorce all over my face and I looked old.
Do you know how many clients of mine complained to me that they feel like divorce aged them at least 5 years?
That's how it feels. I mean, what do you tell your clients?
I tell them, take back some control. You've got this. That's exactly why we're teaming up with Dermamate. It's a no-brainer for our show. Dermamate is a dermatologist-developed skincare line, actually developed by a fabulous dermatologist, Dr. Amy Brodsky. And guys, it's so incredibly effective and affordable. I use it myself, and honestly, I loved the results.
Okay, what's your favorite Dermamate product?
Okay, so I'm partial. I love them all, but if I had to pick one, retinol serum.
Ooh, what did you notice from the retinol serum?
The glow. You look alive.
Okay. I need to look alive, and girl, I love a glow. And here's the thing. Dr. Amy Brodsky is such a fan of our show that she's actually giving our listeners up to 50% off if they use code AMY50 at checkout. So guys, go to dermamade.com and use code AMY50 at checkout. Direct link in our show notes.
So this is Eden. And one thing that I do want to add is I was like probably in seventh grade when all this was going down. So it had nothing to do with not necessarily wanting to see my father or going to see my father, but I wanted to stay home to see my friends. And my mother always made me go on the weekends. And there were some times that I would be screaming and crying. And it wasn't about visiting my father. It was about being away from my friends, which I think probably added a little more stress to my father in the situation because I would be leaving the house screaming and crying, not because I didn't want to see him, but because I wanted to stay home. But yeah, no, like I loved it. Remember that big red carpet he had? Like it was like the red room. Like we loved it. And my memory of that isn't me getting stuck to the popsicle. It's Jason using that cat's eye or whatever that is from you get from swampy areas and scratching his cornea. Like those are what we remember.
And is Jason your brother, I assume?
Jason's our brother.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Okay. When you first started talking, Eden, about clarifying something, I thought you were going to clarify about the time when you got your tongue stuck to the popsicle. Oh. I'm like, there is somebody you have to say.
So piggybacking off of the red, he also had a red Ford Escort wagon that he would drive back and forth. And that was probably, Eden said seventh grade, so I was fifth grade. That was my high school vehicle that I got to drive later on. So a lot of fun memories in that car that he had. But I think, you know, Eden and I talk about all the, you know, the really fun and funny memories, you know, but I think one time I do remember when he took us, I think it was one of the first times because our mother stayed at home with us. And so one of his first times alone with us, and Eden may be able to elaborate on the story, but you remember, I think there was a payphone and dad, we were like all fighting, all three of us. And like dad like pulled over to the side of the road. And I think he called mom and was like, what do I do?
He's like, SOS, like SOS.
Yes. So I definitely remember a moment like that. And I think a lot of parents probably when, you know, depending on their role in the relationship, have a lot of firsts after a divorce. And so I think that was one of the firsts for him.
I think that it's nice that you actually have a memory of dad calling mom, reaching out for help, because I think you're going to have a lot of people who are in the boat right now, like let's say they're already going through the divorce, where mom and dad are like barely speaking. So they can't even imagine that counter co-parent coming to them saying, I need help. And so it's so nice to hear like, okay, there are divorced parents out there who still, if things get rough, they're going to pull the car over, grab a payphone and say, SOS, I need you. So I think that that's nice to hear. I'm sorry, Eden, what were you going to say?
Oh, yeah. So I was just going to say, and I think a lot of those phone calls were probably me at the time, because I think behaviorally, just the age I was, 13, 14, like hating the world, wanting to like just be with my friends. Like I think I did probably cause a lot of angst for my father. And I do remember times being with my father, my mom getting on the phone and basically saying, get your shit together. Like, this is your weekend with your father. Like, behave. Like, you're not coming home. You're not allowed. You're not going to so-and-so's birthday. Like, enjoy the time with your father. And that was it.
It's interesting, Eden, because Morgan, how often do you feel like the oldest child has a hard time?
Oh, yeah. The oldest child, and especially females at the age 12, 13, 14. It is such a difficult time in a female's life at age. And so when clients have a female at that age, boys are different. They, you know, kind of, but the oldest definitely have some, the weight is on them. The weight is on their shoulders and then they want to say so. And that's just how it is. So for sure. But I want to get to Meg and her. And
me too. Me too. Okay. So we're sticking with the childhood stories right now. So Meg, how old were you when mom and dad separated?
I wasn't even one. So oh, wow. I was very young. I was it's all I knew. It's all I knew was my parents were no longer together. And, you know, the different weekends that our custody was every other weekend and every Tuesday night with my dad.
Okay. So another situation where mom had primary custody. Now, I'm curious, since you were so little when this happened, at what point did you start asking mom or dad why?
Oh, geez. Maybe like, because my dad and stepmom got married when I was 3. So I feel like that was like another change that happened. I'm like, what is happening? Like, you know, that's not my mom. That's my stepmom. And that I probably like maybe 4, maybe I would say once, you know, I feel like that's probably, I don't have a memory like Eden, but I have like some small memories of, you know, 4 or 5, maybe, you know, thinking like something's not right. I feel like this is not normal.
And it's funny, Meg, you say that, you know, not, there's not a lot of people, at least that I see client-wise, that are getting divorced when they have a child of such a young age. They're at that stage, I see a lot of people very unhappy. Obviously, you've got a new child, you have a lot of changes, but they're trying to figure out, is it like the newness of what we're going through as a couple with a child, or is it our marriage? So a lot of people don't pull the plug at that point in time. So it's really interesting to hear that you were so young when it happened and then kind of taking it all the way forward. Also, another concern that probably people might have hearing your story is, you know, your father really didn't have a ton of parenting time. So I'm sure that any dads listening to this are like, holy cow, that really wasn't a lot of parenting time. Would you say that you, during that parenting time, had good relationship with him?
I think we did have definitely like a bonding moment because he drove me to school every either Wednesday or Thursday morning, and we would leave early. We would go to White Hen. He would get a newspaper. I would get a donut for breakfast, and I would, he did not know how to cook, so we would have to buy lunch. So we would go to the deli at White Hen and get a sandwich made, and I would have like the best snacks. Everyone would be so jealous on those days that I would bring my lunch into school. And that would be kind of like our bonding time of us, you know, leaving early. Cause at the time, my dad probably lived like 25 minutes away from where I went to grade school. So we'd have to leave fairly early in the morning. And so I, you know, that's a vivid memory I have. It was our routine, and that was the thing that we did, was he would read the newspaper, have a Diet Pepsi, and I would have a donut. And that was our morning routine.
That sounds really good right about now. I don't know why, just the idea of a donut. The Diet Pepsi part, not so much. But
well, yeah, he was addicted to that, that's for
like,
sure.
And I don't know, something about Diet Pepsi is a red flag to me. I don't know, I'm a
especially
Diet Coke
at like
girl.
7:30 in the morning. Yeah, yes,
but it's also, I don't know anybody who would choose Pepsi over Coke. Sorry, this episode Agreed. Is clearly not sponsored by PepsiCo. But yeah, what? I mean, given the choice, really?
Agreed. Yes, I think I am all Diet Coke.
I think I know why they got divorced. I'm just kidding. Okay, so what I want to know, because this caught my attention, dad remarried when you were 3.
Yes. Yes.
Fuck. I mean, that's hard, right?
Yeah, and it again, it's all I knew. Like, I knew that was just like my normal, because she also brought 2 other children from her previous marriage into my life, so... adding on, like going from like no other kids to having 2 siblings, you know, every other weekend and once a week, like that was just like it definitely threw me, from what I can remember, for a loop of just like the new normals.
How old were the stepkids at the time?
My sister's 2 years older than me, so she was probably like 5. And then my brother, geez, I always forget, he's like 5 years older than me, so like 10 maybe.
Okay, so this makes me think of an episode we did about a year ago. Or not quite, actually, Morgan, when we had Ron Deal on and we talked about blending families. Remember that?
Yep.
And something that he said that I thought was so interesting was this idea, this notion that people think, just what he said, blended families, right? That you throw all these kids together into like a blender, you turn on the blender, and you're going to make this new concoction. But that is not what you do. You cannot just throw people together and, you know, turn on the on switch and think that everything's going to be fine. He used this analogy of throwing in these children or ingredients into a crock pot and you make a stew. So you leave the potatoes as they are, the carrots as they are, the meat, etc., and you let them simmer. And I'm wondering, do you remember, what's your experience like? Do you feel like everybody was kind of shoved together? And it was like, we got to make this work. This is the new family. Or was it low and slow?
Yes and no. I feel like they from what I can remember, at least, they definitely hesitated to like kind of bring us together. Cause again, I wasn't there every day. Even when I was super young, I feel like just depending on like, you know, how I was doing, it wasn't, you know, consistently every other weekend when I was super young and even when they got married. But I do remember like my sister did not like me. We definitely like fought. I went from being the only child, because I was the only child of my mom and dad, to being not the only child. And I did not like that. I was always looking for attention at my dad's, and I was kind of causing chaos. And I feel like I was like always rebellious a little bit of just like wanting that attention that I would normally get just from my mom being at my mom's house. So it definitely took a lot of time. And but, you know, my sister and I now, she was my maid of honor. Like, we were still very close. You know, it took a long time, but it definitely was like both of us kind of like, we're not going anywhere. So we got to get along.
So true.
We don't have a choice right now.
So true. So, but Meg, let me clarify one thing for you and ask you. Did your dad really make a good point of trying to give you special time during his parenting time away from stepmom, away from the splendid family, so that you knew that you were important to him? Because I vaguely remember that.
Yes, absolutely. He reffed basketball growing up. So like he did college basketball games. And so he and I, that was kind of our thing, is that we would go to the games together. So he did pretty like Midwest games. So a lot of local driving games. So that was kind of our time together. If it was his weekend and he had a game, I was going to those and kind of, you know, sitting in the crowd solo. I learned from a very early age of all the good snacks to get at all the concession stands. But that was our time together. And then obviously like when he would take me to school, because my sister and brother and I went to a different grade school. So he was the one driving me when it was, you know, his time to have me. I also vividly remember we'd tell my stepmom we were going to church, but we'd really go to breakfast together and drive by and get a pamphlet and say that we went to church. That was our time together. And so we definitely did, you know, things together, not just with either my stepmom or my step siblings. Which I do cherish those times that we had together for sure.
So one of the things I see in my cases that really kind of makes or breaks a good divorce situation is whether the parent either starts making new traditions, which both of your parents did, and making the child or children feel special with those new traditions. So what we're hearing from both, you know, Eden and Larissa, and then also Meg's situation, is that both of their parents took a step back and actually put them first when it was their parenting time and made new traditions with them, which really what we're seeing is that the kids don't think about this conflict. They don't, because what they're thinking about is, dad's taking me to breakfast instead of church, you know, or we're going to have popsicles and on dad's futon. That's like awesome to the children. And so we always talk about it, Andrew, and I just filmed something the other day, and that's what we talked about, which is, Make new traditions. Keep what you can of the old, but make new, and don't shove a new family down, you know, your child's throat. Just ease into it. Right, Andrea?
And with that, it was also, kids are ultimately going to care about how all of this affects them.
Yep.
So, and I think that that's what I'm hearing a lot of, you know, it's okay, maybe dad couldn't cook and make you a nice breakfast, but he took you to White Hen. And you had, you know, a great lunch, and you got to make all your friends jealous at school because you had all these great snacks, right? And you got a donut every morning while he drank his disgusting diet Pepsi, you know? And so, and the same thing with Larissa and Eden, right? Like, they cared about the fun experiences that dad could give them at his studio apartment in Vermont. And so I think for people listening to this, it's all about what you can do to make these connections in this time that you have with the kids meaningful. And I don't want to sound insensitive when I say that it's quality over quantity, because as a mom and as a divorced mom with two small children, believe me, I get it. The idea of not having your kids every single day is innately so unnatural, and it's awful. And you can still have a really, really strong connection with these kids.
Yep, I agree. And there's this common misconception there, and it makes me crazy. It's like this misconception that divorce, all divorce is bad. All divorce is going to hurt the children. It's just out there and no one's talking about that's not really the case. What the research has shown is it's not that divorce is going to hurt the children. It's really the loyalty bind that some parents put the children. And that's pitting the children against the other spouse or the other parent. It's making poor decisions or putting them in situations where they feel uncomfortable. If you're hearing Meg, Larissa, and Eden, neither of their parents did that. In fact, I think Larissa and Eden's parents, especially their mother, could have done that in a heartbeat. I mean, they were honest with our listeners that dad cheated on mom. It was out there. That's a pretty shitty situation to be in for mom. But mom was the stand-up person and said, you know what? That's still your father. You're going to go with him and you're going to do all of these things that you should be doing with your dad. Same thing with Meg. They didn't put Meg in a loyalty bind and she was so little. It was more like, all right, dad's got a new family. Like you're in it. Let's go. So remember that it's all about what the research shows. If the kids are going to come out of it okay, it's all about not putting them in these bad situations or doing your best. And remember, Andrea and I always say, nobody is perfect. You are going to make mistakes.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, Morgan, is people listening to this, don't think like, well, I've already fucked up then. So that's really nice for these girls, but my kids are not going to have that because I've already put them in the middle. It's never too late to turn this thing around. You're not only are you human, you are a role model for these kids who are also going to make mistakes. So the best thing that you can do is fuck up and then show them how you recover from it, right? I mean, I have to tell you guys, some of the best moments that I have with my kid is when I can show them how mom recovers, because that is what you're showing them to do, just like navigating a divorce in it of itself. A divorce is an event. It's not an ideal event, but guess what? Life is full of unideal events. Your children are going to go through their own breakups. They're going to lose a job. They're going to lose friends. Things in life are going to happen. So frame it up in your mind that way. You're showing them at a young age how you recover, how you navigate something that's less than ideal and what life can be like on the other side of it. So, okay. Let's talk about how things changed as we got a little bit older. So Meg, something that you said to me when you and I chatted prior to recording, which I thought was just so kind of funny, was going back to the whole loyalty conflict thing about how when you're older and you're visiting family on holidays, how you always feel like, and we all do, right? Like, oh God, how long do I have to stay here? And I have to go to this place after this. Or maybe, you know, mom and dad live far apart. So you're doing Thanksgiving with one person this year, but then you're really feeling guilty because the other person's putting pressure on you that you're not with them. And you said something about how you wish you were still operating under a court order that told you where to be and when, so that you didn't have to make the decisions yourself. So I'm just wondering, how often did you feel that way as an adult?
It's funny, because even at 34, almost 35, I'm married, I have a husband, so we have, you know, multiple families obligations, and I still am like, God, I really wish someone was just like, sorry, the court says I have to go to my mom's house this weekend. But it definitely, you know, growing up, like, again, that was just all I knew. So, like, I just knew, like, my dad was going to be picking me up on Christmas Eve or, you know, vice versa, whatever it might be. It really got difficult for me in high school when I started driving. So, I think the parenting agreement was a little bit flexible. You know, I was kind of driving. I had friends really all over the western suburbs. And at that point, I feel like I was kind of pulled in different directions of like, well, now you can drive. You can go to dad's for 2 hours and then come to my house for an hour and, you know, whatever it might be. So it really was, I'm a people pleaser by nature. So I feel like even growing up, I was like, okay, I don't want to disappoint dad if I'm there for 2 hours and then I'm only at my mom's for 3 hours, you know, I'm there longer. Like it really was difficult to making sure that, like, I was so worried about disappointing them. But they just wanted to make sure that I saw, you know, both parties at that point. And it was it was more of an internal issue that I was dealing with of like, okay, I don't want to disappoint them. I don't want, you know, to make, you know, my mom mad that I'm, you know, at dad longer, whatever it might be. You know, once I got the license, it was kind of a blessing and a curse, you know, given the situation, but for sure got more complicated as I got older and, you know, had friends and was out and going out and had parties to go to and had a job that I was working at. So like it definitely became more difficult to making sure that I was, you know, giving even time to both parents.
That's interesting because you would think that you don't think about how the child's feeling in high school because you're trying to give them more autonomy to go. You've got a license. You can go drive around. You can stop my dad's house. You can stop my mom's house. And you're like thinking to yourself, I've never heard this side of the story, Meg. Like, God, this sucks. Like, I don't know where to go. I can go anywhere, but I don't know where to go. Somebody please tell me from a court order where to go.
Yes, it was. I still say it literally every holiday. It's kind of, I hate to say it because I love the holidays, but at the same time, it's made me resent them a little bit because they were never like, you know, I didn't wake up Christmas morning every year at my mom's house. It was different every year. So like, I didn't have the same traditions every year. And I feel like it was just, it made me resent them a little bit. And it was challenging for sure.
So are you saying that you growing up would have liked being at the same place every year, even if that meant, you know, holidays maybe look differently?
I think when I was younger, for sure, of, you know, waking up Christmas morning, Santa came and has all these presents. But then at the same time, I look back and I'm like, God, I was so lucky to be able to have two Christmases and two birthdays. And like both parents did such a good job making sure that I had that. And I know that's not the case for everyone, but like it took me a very long time to realize like I was lucky to have two houses with double toys and double clothes. And, you know, I had stability between the two homes and I was able to have, you know, two Christmases, two birthdays. Like not everyone has that, but it took me a very long time to realize that it's not just because I wasn't at my mom's house doesn't mean that it didn't mean the same thing.
I think that it's also a matter of like, know the personality of your kids. Like you, Meg, sound a lot like me in that, and you already said it yourself, you're more of a people pleaser. So you internalize what other people are going through and you put it on yourself to make everything better. I think other kids who aren't like that, you know, I don't know that these things land the same way. I'm sure there are other kids out there who are in high school who are like, I love that I have the freedom to do what I want and I don't give a shit about mom or dad's feelings. I'm going to do this. So I think it's just so interesting hearing a different perspective and how the feelings that and the way that we are as kids, like we don't really change, like we evolve, but as we become adults, but I'm sure all of us, we can probably think back on the way we felt when we were kids. And now we're just older versions of that,
right?
You know?
So I want to get into, so now we're kind of in the high school era and I have a question for Meg and then Larissa and Eden. So Meg, I mean, everything wasn't roses for you and your, you know, family. I mean, if I recall, you had a little bit or maybe a lot of bit of drama with, you know, your family related to your blending with your stepmom. And it also may have caused more tension between your mom and dad, which then kind of trickled down to you. Is that accurate?
Yes. My mom and stepmom had very different parenting styles, which caused conflict because, again, I was at my mom's house for the most part. You know, my mom did have a very serious boyfriend for a very long time and, you know, had kids into that situation. So I wasn't always alone at my mom's house. But they were much older than me. So I really was like an only child at my mom's house. And then I would go to my dad's house. My stepmom was the disciplinarian, and I did not like that. I would try to do everything for her to not have to tell me what to do, but also I would rebel in a little bit. So I feel like I did not like that that's who she was. And I was getting away with things at my mom's house that I clearly was not able to do at my dad's house. And I pushed that limit for sure. I will admit that. And so, you know, there were definitely different parenting styles between the two. And it did cause like, well, that's not what my mom said I could do, or that's not what my stepmom said that I should be doing. Like I kind of played both ends against the middle because I would be like, well, that's not what dad said. Like I never knew what was right. I just did what I wanted to do and I got disciplined for sure. But then I would go to my mom's house and it was just a little bit more, you know, it was just me. So I didn't have all the discipline. My mom was a little bit, you know, even keen with that. So going to my, you know, dad and stepmom's, it was way different over there. And I didn't like that.
Yeah. And was it just because there was boundaries though, or was there more to it?
You know, when I was younger, there was definitely more boundaries. And then when I went to high school, I had stricter rules, you know, couldn't have a cell phone after a certain time. And I think I resented it in high school, my freshman and sophomore year, because I didn't have a car. And because I went to a school where I had friends all over the Western suburbs, I missed out on a lot. So I definitely had like FOMO, if that was a thing back then, but it is now, of, you know, I resented it in the scenario of like, well, I'm here and I can't be with my friend's house. So kind of like what Eden said, like that was my main focus, especially in high school. Of course, you don't want to be hanging out at your dad's house. You want to be out with your friends, meeting your new friends from your school and sports and going to the games and everything. But it definitely put a little bit of conflict. And I think also I had to move into my dad and stepmom's house temporarily in high school, due to circumstances outside of my control. And I hated that because, again, I wasn't by my friends. All my friends lived within like a mile radius. So I felt like I was just missing so much of my high school life and, you know, being a teenager and driving around with friends and, you know, your normal teenage life, like things that don't matter now, but mattered so much back then because I was missing out on it.
All right. Two takeaways legally that I see here, although you said a lot and thank you for being so candid about it. Number one is you can only control what happens at your house. So you will have different rules from your ex's house. It just will happen. And one thing that I'm urging you to take a step back on is the fact that it's easy to blame the other side. So what Meg was going through, it's easy for her mom to say, you know what? Stepmom's a real a-hole. This is ridiculous what's going on. But what probably people in a divorce situation aren't seeing is that it's super normal for kids to play both sides. So they know that if mom, when I come home to mom's house, she's going to get riled up if I tell her that stepmom said X, Y, and Z. And maybe that will get me a little more leeway so I have more time at mom so I can see my friend. So what I'm saying is that kids do play the parents, even though they're going through a tough time, to try to get what they want. And it's easy to forget that and not step back, especially if your communication in the divorce process has broken. So I'm just urging you to back up before you start hurling allegations on the other side and think about maybe what's going on. Maybe there's some communication that should be happening between the other house.
And something else that I'll say, because I just was talking to somebody this week who's going through the same thing. Mom and dad get along great. There's no issues with the step parents, but it's that they live really far apart. And the teenage daughter is now in like the dating world. And for her to be away and be at dad's house, who's like 45 minutes away from where the social hub is stressing her out because there are boys going to like parties that she needs to go to. And so it's not that she doesn't want to be with dad, but she doesn't want to be with dad right now. So I feel like if it's at all possible to be flexible on parenting time, if the kids are in high school, I think that that's really important. And I know that there are going to be things outside of people's control. And a lot of times you do have to abide by the legal documents when you cannot come to a better resolution. But be mindful that these are human beings and they're going to have things that come up. And again, you don't want the kids to feel the weight and the stress and a loyalty conflict of, but it's my weekend. Because it's tough, right? I mean, there's a lot going on.
It's tough. And speaking of the weight and the stress, one thing I want to do is I want to hop to Larissa and Eden. So I'm going to ask Eden since Larissa's brain is clearly mush. Eden, when did you find out that your dad cheated on you?
So this is kind of a funny story because I swear my mom told me when I was like in sixth grade, but you also have to understand that I was probably the most mature, like 11-year-old. I was like 11 going on 47. So my mother just basically told me the situation because my dad's girlfriend was around. My dad stayed with her for several years after the divorce. So I kind of read behind the lines and I had asked my mom why they got divorced. And my mom said, I think you know why. And I said, yeah, it's because of Terry. So I don't necessarily think anybody came out and told me. I kind of asked and then I just knew.
Larissa, is it the same for you? Did you understand that or did Eden tell you as the big sister?
She probably told me. I mean, she told me about Santa Claus and everything else, but no.
What a ruiner, Eden. Jeez.
I didn't want her to be blinded in the world. I wanted her to be eyes wide open. I told her when she was in kindergarten. I was awful.
Oh, good. Things get better. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah.
It's like she also taught me how to act surprised. So it was good. But
which comes in handy when you're finding out about dad's affair and Santa Claus.
No, I do remember that period of time, but my memory of it is that my mom was always honest with us and didn't try to sugarcoat things and never lied to us. And so if we asked a question, we would get a direct answer about what was happening. So I remember being very young and knowing that. I mean, what I understood that meant. I'm not sure if I knew what it really meant back then, but I've always known why. And, you know, I think a lot of kids might resent their parents for it or the parent that did it but I think because everyone was so honest with us, there was no one was hiding anything. And so I don't hold any resent for any of
it. Well, that's interesting because some clients that I have really want to tell their children and they either want to tell them because they're the guilty party and they want it off their conscience, or they want to tell them because they want the kids to essentially be mad at the other side because they're mad. And it's interesting to see both you and Eden, you were like, yeah, this is what happened. You're looking at it as from a black and white perspective, not as a, I'm going to hold a grudge against you, dad perspective, and I'm not going to see you. I mean, so it lands differently than I think a lot of people may think it would land. So it's an interesting perspective.
I think it's still a hard call, though, because I feel like Morgan and I both don't want to go out there and tell people, go ahead and tell your kids.
No. Legally.
There's nothing they can handle it. I mean, yeah, it's still something you really, and it is a family to family, case to case thing, because you guys handled it really well. But I'm sure a lot of other kids wouldn't handle it the same way.
But I will tell you, this is Eden. Our mother told us. We never, or Larissa, I don't know if you did. We never talked about it with our father.
Really?
We knew, but it was like, from my perspective, it was something that I knew, he knew, we knew, we never spoke of it.
Okay.
So,
you're just like, oh, yeah. Hey, Terry, so, you're back.
Yeah. Oh, hi. But the irony to life is she broke up with my father when I was, in ninth grade? Because my father told me this too. I don't know why, but he said that Terry broke up with him because she couldn't trust him, which is ironic.
Yeah. Recurring theme.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's like one thing I remember our mom telling us is like, you know, if you break someone's trust, then it's going to be really hard, you know, to be with someone that you've broken. You know, if everyone's breaking trust, like, how are you going to trust those individuals? And I think, you know, of course, like, I felt terrible and still feel terrible that my mother went through all of that. And I think speaking about just like a mother, like, I mean, she was the stability of everything and, you know, held everything together. And so, of course, you know, I felt really bad for her. And I still, to this day, feel really bad she had to go through all that. And I wish she didn't have to do that. But it also showed us what a strong, you know, woman she was.
Okay, so you queued me up really well here, Larissa. I'm going to send you a Venmo for that later. So let's talk about how watching mom and dad go through this and the way that they went through this, how it impacted your relationships as grown women and adults. I mean, I'm sure that this has had an impact on all of you. So Meg, Larissa, Eden, anybody jump in here and let's talk about things that we witnessed or things that mom or dad taught us that we're taking with us as a result of their own experiences.
I think one of the most important things that I know Eden learned from that experience too is our mother taught us to be independent women and not depend on anyone.
And so that was really important to us. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it before, and I never envisioned my life as like a married woman. I envisioned myself as with a career. I envisioned my kids. I had like a picture of what I was living at home for the most part, even though my father was there. And, you know, I'm married now, and that's like the icing on the cake. You know, he's the cherry on top of everything. And, you know, it's great and makes it better. But when I was younger, I didn't envision that. I envisioned my career and my children.
Wow. How about you, Eden?
So that's interesting. So, well, number one, yes, my mother always told us never to rely on anyone, not a man, not a woman, not anybody, that you always need to make a career for yourself. And one other bit of advice she gave us was to never exit the working world, because she made the agreement with my father to stay home. And it was very difficult for her to kind of get back on her feet. So she said, if we ever have children, just work part-time, just keep yourself relevant within working. So for us, I think it really instilled this very strong work ethic.
I like that.
Yeah, the irony is I actually thought I was going to get married and have like four kids. I am married with no kids, but it has nothing to do with a divorce. It actually has to do with, I think we're millennials before millennials decided to be super selfish. And we just like our life. We really do. We like to travel. We like to spend time together. And that's just a choice that we made together as a couple that has nothing to do with my parents being divorced.
I joke because I say she already raised me. And I think when there are older siblings in a divorce, like oftentimes, and I don't know how it goes down in other families, but Eden taught me how to drive. She, you know, told me what to do and not to do. And don't get me wrong, we fought a lot growing up and in high school. We weren't super close at that time. But we joke that she raised me. And I think sometimes the older siblings will step in and do a little bit of that.
So actually, and we kind of, this is the other hand, one of the things that we touched on before, I think is really important too, is like, Morgan, I think you said it, is like the older child, or maybe Andrea, you said it, the older child takes on a lot of responsibilities. I actually did everything. Like I became the second parent, not because my mom asked me to, because I felt guilty, because I wanted to. I would actually get reverse grounded as a child. If I did chores, I would get in trouble. So I was not allowed to do things as a child because I was always picking up after my sister, picking up after my brother. And my mother didn't want me to grow up resenting my childhood or not enjoying things. So I actually, ironically, my brother and sister had chores and my chore was not to do chores. It was to be a kid. Yeah.
That's really interesting that she had the foresight to see what was kind of going on, because I don't usually see that a lot. I think that you're right, that the oldest sibling does take on a lot and they do feel guilty and they try to make everybody happy because they feel that there's unhappiness or something going on between everybody. Andrea, you had something to add.
I want to hear from Meg. I'm so curious to know, Meg, with what you went through and with mom and dad divorcing when you were a baby, right? So that is all you knew. Now, granted, it was tough with stepmom, right? And there was some issues there. But how did that impact you as an adult? And what did you learn about relationships?
I definitely had hesitations, you know, growing up. And I was like, I don't even think in my early 20s, I was like, I don't even think I want to get married. Like, that's just, you know, I didn't want to be another statistic like my parents were. It didn't also help that I worked in a law firm for 6 years, a divorce law firm, I should add, through high school and college. So I saw a lot of it. And then I was like, later on, I realized like, I'm not my parents and I don't have to follow in their footsteps. And it really turned my like, you know, view on it. It's like, I'm not them and I can create my own relationships and build my own relationships, not even just, you know, with a boyfriend or husband. I feel like even with friendships too, like you have trust issues, I think, you know, just given like, I don't want to be hurt. I don't want this to fail. So I think it was important to making sure that like I didn't follow in those footsteps and, you know, have that in the back of my head.
So Larissa, you're a doctor. What do you think that seeing what your mom went through where she had to get back on her feet, go back to school, and your dad really kind of did the same thing too. Do you think that pushed you to be a high achiever or had anything to do with it?
I'm not sure. I think our dad always pushed us. You know, my mom pushed us to be independent, but when he went on and got a graduate degree and more education, he really wanted us to have that as well. And so I think that's kind of
part of where that came from.
I like it because what I'm hearing is divorce isn't defining you. I'm hearing it's what your parents did defined you. And it kind of has not a lot to do with this divorce that you went through, which is great because I know a lot of our listeners, that's one of the things they're scared to death about, is that the minute they make that decision to move forward and divorce, I mean, they are worried that they are going to implode their children for life. And that's really not what we're hearing today.
No, I'm hearing that these are three women who maybe didn't have an ideal upbringing, but who does, right? Like, I don't think anybody can say not a single thing happened to me. And then what coping skills would they have, right? Like, how do you ever get coping skills unless you have to apply the skills? So what I'm hearing is that we have three people who went through it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but are you guys all happy, flourishing individuals right now? Nodding. You guys are forgetting that this is a podcast. Like
silent. Yes. Yes.
Everyone's silent.
I'm like, say something, damn it. Okay. I have loved this conversation. I think that this has been hopefully so helpful to people who don't really know where to go and they just feel so worried about how this can impact their kids. I have one last question. If you guys are standing on stage and you were given a microphone and they say, okay, what do you want to tell people? Is there any takeaway that you would want to let people who are debating whether or not to get divorced or they're already getting divorced and they're so worried about the kids? What would you want them to know?
This is Larissa. I would say, I think that my life was better because of the divorce. You know, our parents got to be, maybe they weren't the right match and they got to be their own individuals, showed us that and really, you know, had a lot of experiences, really great experiences because they were divorced that I don't think we would have had if they stayed together.
Yeah, this is Eden. And I'll echo that. I definitely think we had a much better life growing up because our parents were divorced. And I think one of the key things is, and this is so cliche, but it's like, put your oxygen mask on first. If you're not happy, your kids aren't going to be happy. So your kids feed off of you. They feed off your energy. And we did see our mom struggle. Like, don't get me wrong. Our mother was upset for a while with what had happened. We were very aware of that. It didn't impact us, that it impacted the quality of our life. But like, once our mother moved on, became happy, our dad was happy. Like, everybody around us was happy. It was actually a good environment. I mean, we spent holidays together. Like, they didn't want to sit next to each other at my wedding. So I sat them at separate tables and they ended up sitting together the whole time, the four of them, like my parents and my step parents. So I think focusing on your own happiness, and I know that sounds super selfish, but if you can't be happy, your kids aren't going to be happy.
Wow. Meg, what do you have to say?
I have two things. I would say I agree 100% with Larissa and Eden. I think it will be okay. Like, it might not be easy at first, but I think, you know, down the line, your kids would realize like that it was better for them to be apart than together. And the other thing is kind of post your decision of divorce is making sure your kids know that it's not their fault and reassuring them like you're not the reason I'm not the reason my parents got divorced. And I was always reminded that. Because it had nothing to do with me and it probably had nothing to do with Larissa and Eden. Like that is just, I think, so important to, you know, anyone that's going through it, is reassuring that your kids, it's not their problem or it's not their fault, I should say, because they don't want to hold that guilt of, you know, did I do something or, you know, should I have done something better? Especially as you get older, you know, the older the kids get, they have more of those feelings inside for sure of like, what could I have done better possibly?
Okay. Last question from me, which is, all three of you are married and all three of you had parents and step parents at the weddings. Did your parents talk or say hello to each other or act cordial at your wedding? I'm going to start with Larissa.
So I would say at the wedding, they definitely asked cordial, but I think acted cordial with each other and it was fine. But I think a recent experience that I just had, both of Eden and I, both of our parents have passed. So now I have my step parents who are still in my life. And the other day, my stepmom lives down the street from me. My stepdad, I still talk to regularly. And my stepmom was at my house and
my stepdad was on the phone and they took the phone and were talking to each other and had, I don't know how long they were talking to each other.
It was Valentine's Day.
And it happened to be,
oh my gosh.
No, they are not going to end up together. Not
you
at
could
all.
You could be honest. Let's be honest. They don't know how to work podcasts anyway. So you can just totally tell us that you're trying to hook your both of your step parents up with each other.
God, no. But I did think, I mean, I thought that was really nice that, you know, they're able to have a conversation, check in on one another. They both lost the person that they loved.
That's awesome. Oh, Eden, how about you? Did your parents say hello?
Yeah, so I sort of mentioned it before, but before my wedding, it was actually this huge contentious thing where my stepfather and mother were like, we do not want to sit with your father. And it just threw like so much stress into the mix with the seating charts and everything. So I didn't sit them together. Lo and behold, at the wedding, they hung out the entire weekend. I get married in Puerto Rico. It was a destination wedding. From the welcome reception to dinner when people got up to dance, they sat together. They were like a foursome, as if they went on a vacation
That's
together.
So funny.
Yeah, I know. So I think my mother was just worried about how things would play out because they hadn't been in the same room. Like, Larissa, how long have you been married? Like 13 years? I've been married 9. So it was probably 4 or 5 years after, right? So they hadn't really been in the same room at an event in that long. So I think they were just nervous of how that would play out. And it played out perfectly fine.
How about you, Meg?
They were cordial. They definitely, you know, can be in the same room, and but they were not sitting at the same table together. That's for sure.
There always needs to be a little bit of alcohol involved. There are definitely a lot of drinks that everyone would have to ease the tension. I wouldn't say that those magical moments always happened without some tension. Like, there's often tension, but everyone's able to see past it and, you know, putting their child first. You know, at your wedding, they're putting you first.
Well, I think a little bit of alcohol is key. When there's a lot of bit of alcohol, I think that's when things can go a little sideways.
Real true.
When we're mixing parents, step-parents, and all of the above.
So, ladies, thank you for coming on. All three of you are super successful and a testament to coming out of divorce on the right side. And really, kudos to your parents for getting you here, because that had a lot to do with them as well. And thank you so much for sharing such a private story.
That was such an important conversation. And I know that that was long, friends, because we had lots of viewpoints to share. But I really hope that you guys took away the main idea that whereas it might not be easy, it is 100% doable and the kids are going to be okay.
Yep. Agreed. I was so happy that three successful women would share their story. But also, I was kind of shocked at the things that they were saying and that they were coming out so unfazed, you know, from finding out that dad cheated on mom to having, you know, very strict rules at one house and very, you know, low end rules or lower end rules at another house, and how they navigated that. I mean, you would think, and I think a lot of listeners probably think, gosh, it's going to really hurt my kids. But all of them came out and they were like, yeah, listen, we dealt with it.
That's because we were talking to adults. Imagine if we had the actual kids on, they might have a different version. But I think what's important to know is that they're going to be fine. Yeah, it's going to be hard in the moment, but don't we care about the lasting effects?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, Morgan, could even talk about things that we went through.
Yeah.
I'm sure that if you talk to the teenage versions of us, we would say like, oh yeah, this shit's hard. Yes. This sucks.
Yes. I mean, whether you're married or not, like I said, parenting is hard. There's no playbook and you just do the best you can. And then you throw in a divorce and you think, oh my gosh, not only is there no playbook, but I'm like destined to fail. And that is not the case. That's what we heard tonight.
Yeah. I loved it. And I hope that you guys did too. And speaking of, when you guys are in our private community on Facebook and you're posting questions about everything about the divorce process, feel free to post about other episodes that you might want to know more about, other topics, I should say. So if there's something like this that would be really helpful, let us know. We produced this episode because we had people say, I want to hear some real life stories. So we're giving it to you. We try so hard to bring relevant conversations into your lives.
Yep. And remember, you know, divorce is a marathon. It is not a sprint. every day may not be a good day, and that is okay. And that's why we're here and we do this show, so that we can let you know that things will be okay. And if today is a really crappy day, more than likely tomorrow's going to be much better.
That's right. And we are here for you every single step of the way. So please go find us on social media, join our private communities, rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show, because we so appreciate it. And remember, above all else, you, my friends, have got this.
And we have got you.